you know, making movies is hard.
Making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Purcell, the founding host of the podcast, and I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker. Yes, I am. And my first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital DVD, Tubi, and Amazon Prime, and other places. And my second feature script is done. Woo!
I'm Liz Manischel. I'm a writer, director, producer who has directed two features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm currently in pre-production on my third, Best Friends Forever. I'm a producer's rep, and I used to manage a department at Sundance, but who cares? On this Thursday bonus episode, we're going to play the interview from episode 289 from October 2020 with writer and director Jonathan Kiefer. Hi, Jonathan Kiefer, who talks about writing and collaborating on his first feature film, Around the Sun. Ulrich thought it was a good match for this episode because Charles and Jonathan are both filmmakers who wrote a feature that was produced before they directed their first features. I agree, Ulrich, that was great. After that, we play another round of The Game. But before we do, don't forget to check out our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/MMIH podcast. And please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. And without any more further bibble babble, here's our throwback interview with Jonathan Kiefer.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We start off a little differently. We do five questions in the beginning, rapid fire style. And so this will be all about Around the Sun.
Right. Let's see if I can handle these questions. Yeah.
Oh, you can handle them, I think. How many days did you shoot the film?
I believe we had a 16-day shoot, if I recall correctly.
What was the budget?
The budget, I'm authorized to say, was somewhere between 100K and infinity.
Cool.
On the lower end of that spectrum.
Lower end of infinity, got it. How long did you work on the film from inception to being released?
From inception, from the Christopher Nolan film of that name. It was
exactly.
Really strange, actually. I watched that movie and then Leo DiCaprio appeared in my dream and then suddenly I had this idea. No, it was, it's funny how, depends where you start counting, because Oliver, the director, and I have known each other for a long time, decades now. And we met in film school at Boston University way back when, and I acted in his thesis film, and that was, you know, in the previous millennium. And we finally eventually got back in touch, and for a couple of years had been talking about working on a feature together because neither of us had done it. And it sort of came to pass that the idea was for me to write something and he would direct it. We tried another project for which we developed a script that I still have, but it was too ambitious, I think, for first timers. So that kind of got shelved. And then eventually Around the Sun came to pass when we both of us just got restless. And I was like, all right, let's just do something that we can really do. And, you know, eventually we sort of got the momentum going for that. And it was about 3 weeks to write the script from when the idea was figured out. And then 4 years from when that happened until right now, which is when it's, you know, being released. That's not a very short answer.
Sorry. Did you do a lot of rewrites along those 4 years?
No, I mean, most of that time, I guess, fortunately, I'm not sure, is really more about, you know, going from having a script to getting it shot and then doing post and then finally sort of getting it into festivals and then going through the festival cycle and now getting to the release phase. We sort of batted around a few ideas because we had the location and it was sort of reverse engineered to go with the place that we had access to. And we had I sort of came up with a dozen or so movie ideas and said, do any of these strike your fancy? And he said, you know, this one might be good. This one might be challenging. We're trying to do this micro budget thing. So this might be off the table. And eventually the place, the chateau that we had access to actually is the place where Fontenelle wrote and set the book that is referenced in the movie. And I discovered that fact. And being sort of like a sci-fi astronomy geek from, you know, way back when, that kind of really caught my imagination. And I was like, let's do this. Let's turn this into a movie. And I think Oliver wasn't sure about it. And I was like, no, just let me write a draft and I'll show you the script. And so it was kind of a risk. But then, yeah, that's what we went with because it was the most sort of peculiar and unique and seemingly achievable on the small end of our budget scale.
Well, two quick questions and then we'll get into it. How big was your crew?
Yeah, we had, 16? No, 13 people, 13 or 14 people. Yeah.
Awesome.
Small crew, very intimate group. And I miss them and I love them. Yeah.
And then out of all your projects, how difficult was this one?
It's a weird question to answer because, on the one hand, you know, it was designed to be as simple as possible. And it came from the frustration of other projects not being possible. But then of course, yeah, like I said, you know, even something that was so quickly written took a long time to realize. So, I mean, on some levels it's the easiest because it's the only feature that, you know, I've made really. there are others that haven't been made. But it was also very challenging in a lot of different ways as most are, I'm sure.
Let's take a step back, just because, again, I haven't seen the movie as per usual. I'm the lazy one. But when I've seen the materials and I've talked to you about it, I framed it in my mind as like Before Sunrise in the UK. Like that's it is in my mind. Or in Europe. I actually don't even know if it's in the UK, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. It's in France, yeah.
Okay, so there we go. So
but French, the actors are English. So yeah, there's Before Sunrise with English accents. Yeah,
exactly. So then you just referred to your love of astronomy and science fiction. So can you bring us, we don't normally do this. We don't usually ask for a synopsis, but this is such an unusual film. Can you talk just like briefly about the blending of genres, I think that was undertaken with this film.
Yeah. I appreciate that. It's, you know, it is kind of hard to synopsize it, which is strange because it really is basically just two people talking for the length of a movie in essentially one location, although they kind of move around. It's about the premise is that a guy comes to check out this chateau in Normandy, and he's a location scout for a film production that might be happening there. And the woman who shows him the place is delighted to tell him about the sort of history of this particular place at which was written this book called Conversations on the Plurality of Worlds in 1686 by Bernard de Fontenelle, which was a real book. And it was one of the first sort of popular science texts that was written as basically a dialogue between a man and a woman that's very flirty, and they kind of spend several nights going out in the gardens and talking about how the cosmos works. And this is one of the first books to kind of popularize the idea that in fact the earth goes around the sun and not the other way around, which was still kind of a new and radical concept at the time that it was written. So the place that we made the movie is where that book was written and set. And so I, you know, thought that's fascinating, and I decided to weave that into the story. And there are some parallels between the way the book unfolds and the way the movie unfolds. And I don't know if that explains it, but yeah, just, you know, all the other ideas that I had for, you know, how could you do a movie with the minimum possible locations and characters that could be set in a beautiful chateau in France were kind of conventional, you know, like we're like, oh, we could do a World War II thing where it's people hiding out from the Nazis, or, you know, we could do a horror thing or something. And it was hard to sort of get my head around that in a way that could really be fresh or at least kind of unique to us. And but the thing about Fontenelle and his book just really was, it's a beautiful book. I mean, it seems very contemporary. It's very flirty and engaging. And if you like sciencey stuff and astronomy stuff, it's like candy. So I couldn't get that out of my head. And I was like, let's make a movie about this. And at the time it was like, Oliver, you know, we're nobodies. Nobody's ever going to see the damn thing anyway. Let's just get something made. And, you know, he bought it. So I'm glad that happened.
So without like ruining any spoilers or anything, I mean, would you call this an adaptation of the book? Because having seen it, I haven't read the book, obviously, but like just from your brief explanation of the book, it almost feels like it could be an adaptation.
Yeah, it's in a weird sort of category where I've described it as inspired by the book because there's a section in there which I think paraphrases and quotes from the book a little bit directly. And, the woman shows the guy around the house and she talks a lot about the book. She's like a super fan of this book. And that's kind of part of the, you know, what they flirt about, which is totally nerdy. But I love that. But otherwise, you know, it's sort of, it goes in its own territory. And I mean, it's obviously, it wouldn't exist without the book, but it's not directly an adaptation. Very kind of experimental in that way. And you know, we'll see what how people like it if they do.
What I love is that like most micro-budget filmmakers are like, let's, you know, let's write to our resources. Let's write in this, like, maybe there's like the, you know, disheveled cabin in the woods, but you're like, no, we have a, I'm sure you've heard this question before. We have like a chateau in France we have access to. So how did you access this castle? Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know, cause I've been kind of hammering home with Oliver that idea of like, come on, man, we've got between us, we've got to have the resources that we need and the experience to make something. And at some point he said, well, you know, my friend has this chateau in Normandy. And I was like, you're kidding. Like, okay, you know, let me stop you right there. There's gotta be something we can do with that. And yeah, I mean you know, it becomes, like I said, it was kind of a risk once you decide to make that the key element of the movie. And he sent me pictures and I was like, wow, this is beautiful. And how great would it be to make something there? And it did sort of speak to, you know, my interest in like Eric Romare films, which are often set in places like that. And people go around talking a lot. Yeah, it sort of captured my imagination a little bit in and of itself. And yeah, the funny thing is that the chateau was the reason we started with this particular project. And it's very specific to that place. But then as we were moving forward, we lost our access to the chateau because his friend, I don't want to go into too many details about it, but the friend who owned the place was having a divorce and they decided, you know, they wanted some privacy and didn't really want a production happening there. So our access disappeared. And it was like, at that point, you know, the script was already written and
you had to find another castle in Normandy.
So yeah, after beginning with the idea of use only the available resources, we then had to go and find another chateau in France. He's in London, so at least he's closer. And I'm in the Bay Area. Not an easy thing to do, but the thing is that Normandy is full of chateaus. And as it turns out, the place that we found, which is from the same period and sort of built in the same style, was owned by an English couple. So Oliver kind of hit it off with them and he said, you know, we were planning to do this thing. And, you know, is there, I think they had rented it out for, you know, as sort of like a B&B kind of thing. And so he got in touch with them and said, you know,
Europe
can
is
we
so
use
different.
Your space? I know, it really is. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was a bit, falling apart, but that, you know, the original place was even more in disarray, and that was part of the original story. But it turned out great because, you know, the hosts were really lovely people, and it was just so sweet to be with them, and they really enjoyed it, and they made food for us, and we all sort of gathered around the piano and sang songs, and you know, they just really opened their space and their hearts to our production, and you know, the whole crew got to stay there, you know, either in the main building or in the sort of nearby buildings on the property. And it helped because we were all able to sort of stay together and do a project that way. Yeah.
That's incredible. That's like, because it's really hard to get anyone to let you shoot anywhere, like let them stay at their place while they're living there and then for them to cook for you. It's like kind of incredible.
Not always. We also had a food person, but
right, I know, but just even that spirit, it's like that's pretty amazing to find that kind of collaborator, you know.
Absolutely. And it, you know, we were kind of in a bubble because like we're in Normandy, it's a very rural area, and the place, the building itself and the buildings around it are sort of far outside of everything. And it was like being in camp, which was kind of nice and sort of a weird way to have your first feature come to pass, because it kind of, I don't know, it might spoil me for future experiences. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I worked as a PA on features and did other stuff. And I've seen a little bit about, you know, different scales of production. But this was definitely a special experience. And I mean, the movie is something that we're proud of and happy to have made, but also the experience of making it was definitely something really sweet. And I treasure that.
I kind of want to ask a little bit about the movie specifically, and I'm sorry, Liz, to
don't give anything away.
It's kind of like, you know, like the whole thing about the genre that you decided to pick for your film. Yeah. Like, you know, you're saying it's kind of like a very hard to describe movie, and like your synopsis doesn't really even describe what it is. Because what it is, if you just really described what it was, you'd kind of be ruining part of the magic of the movie in a way.
Yeah.
Don't ruin the magic, Ulrich.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
thank you for suggesting that there is, in fact, magic. Because
there is magic, I think. Yeah. And because, like, especially the way that you tell the story and the way that the story unfolds and the way that you pull us along through. I don't really want to. Should we ruin it, Jonathan? Or like just say
no,
spoiler,
we said
spoiler?
It three times. We're not
okay,
ruining it.
Okay, we're not ruining it. Anyways, so.
It's an experiential narrative, I would say.
Right.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
kind of a hangout movie, you know. And if you don't hang out with it, you won't.
But it has this other extra element to it, which makes it extremely engaging. So I but anyways, the point is, like, did you always want to make movies like this, or like, where is your heart genre wise?
Yeah.
Like, where did you want to go? And it almost sounds like this movie told you what it wanted to be as far as genre. Like, you had these other ideas of like horror and like a war movie or whatever, but then like, it's like you just went towards this direction. It's just like, it's kind of a unique direction to go in, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I think I understand what you're getting at. We're sort of dancing around. There's a structural element of the movie that is sort of unusual, although increasingly less unusual from what I've been seeing lately. But I'll just say this, that at the time, you know, when I was conceiving it, I was thinking about movies like Abbas Kiarostami's film Certified Copy. I was thinking about the movies of Hong Sang-soo, who is a very prolific South Korean director who makes these really wonderful, charming films that are often very simple in terms of, you know, very few characters, and there's just a lot of hanging out and chatting, but they're sort of structural twists to those films that I like. And I remember thinking at one point, I sort of, as we presented the movie at festivals, I've been, you know, sort of telling an old joke about how, like, we're so frugal with this thing that we even, you know, recycled our own scenes in the movie. And so there is an aspect of the structure of it that is about that, where it's like, okay, we are really trying to do the minimal, you know, a scenario here where the overhead to get this thing made is as low as possible. And one way to do that, especially if you've only got two characters, is a structural way with the narrative.
Right.
So that was something that I was thinking about. And it also, you know, that made sense to me sort of organically with regard to the inspiration of Fontenelle's book. And yeah, I recognize that as I'm saying all this stuff, you know, people listening to the podcast will be like, what the hell is he?
They have to
see
the movie.
More. I'm sitting here being like, I want to watch it now.
Well, please do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as you're able to, I understand that, you know, everyone's busy.
I also just think, like, you know, compared to your average indie drama or indie, I don't even know what genre you'd put it into, like, I guess indie romance drama, maybe. But like, it's got this whole like chateau backdrop, which is so unique. Like, most movies are set in towns or cities or houses. They're not set in like this beautiful, you know, magical place, basically, which is what it looked like, you know, from as a viewer. So it's like, I think like even just that, like you have another angle up, a leg up on other films just because of the visuals alone, you know,
let alone the
structure, you know.
Right. I hope that people respond to that.
Oh yeah. Another thing I was just like kind of getting at is like we have three filmmakers here in this conversation. Like, if each of us had that resource, you know, if Liz and I had our own version of that chateau to go after or whatever, we would have made completely different movies.
I know.
You know?
And that's fascinating.
And I just think it's really interesting that like, that's the direction that you went in. And it's like what felt right to you. And then it's like how this movie was born. It's really, I don't know. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. It does feel, you know, as I said early on, I think when trying to kind of persuade Oliver to go along with it, I sort of recognized like, well, yeah, of the list of the ideas that we could do, this one is the most sort of idiosyncratic and it's the one that I respond to. And so, yeah, I'm very grateful that he and I have known each other for a long time. I'm very grateful that he sort of saw the promise of that and responded to it. And yeah, then it became a collaboration, which of course every project needs to be. And then, you know, yeah, I couldn't have directed this movie. I mean, I'm very glad that he did it, if only for that reason, you know, just to be able to be on the set with a group of people, including a friend who is also an experienced director, and to kind of shadow him a little bit and see how the nuts and bolts work of realizing this sort of idiosyncratic and personal project. And yeah, it's interesting what you say, because I am curious to think about that. That's an interesting exercise to imagine, like, what would, if you gave other filmmakers the same sort of basic resources, you know, what would they come up with? And yeah, clearly very different things. And that's
well,
exciting to think about.
You kind of, you provided a great segue for my question, which is that you are a director, but you happen to write this script, and you were saying that you couldn't have directed this, which I'm taken aback by, and I'm not going to press on that because this is not therapy, but like, and we always talk about things like that. We talk about imposter syndrome a lot, but like, can you talk a little bit about the relationship with Oliver, what your boundaries were as a creative force in this project, and also why he directed it, why, you know, do you want to direct the next project? Can you, it's a lot of questions, but maybe somewhere in there, pick something.
I mean, you know, I felt like we had, years prior to this, you know, we had, got back in touch and, had sort of decided to do something together. And so that idea that it would be something I write that he directs, existed even before this project. I mean, there was another script, as I said, and which didn't happen. And it was, you know, that was very frustrating because it, you know, you spend years and you don't, it doesn't materialize. And then in retrospect, I look back on that other project now and, you know, it could work as a writing sample, but I feel like the movie itself is sort of dated because it's of the time that it was written. So I can imagine that it wouldn't, you know, it's not something to revisit necessarily. But the experience of going through a script, you know, saying like, I'm going to hand this off to you, or, you know, we're going to work on this together, however you want to frame it, is important. And it's important to sort of get out of your own head sometimes. And for me, I like the solitude of writing, but then I get to a point where I feel lonely and I want to be with other people who can solve problems and with a fresh eye, or who can, you know, sort of, check me on my indulgences or whatever it is. There was the idea that, you know, I would come up with something that Oliver could direct. That was always sort of part of the challenge too. Like, okay, well, I'm limiting the variables so that, if you take away, you know, so many different possibilities and then you line it up so that it has to check off a few boxes, then it's sort of like, it makes it easier in a way because you're like, all right, well now we're, it can only be this, so we'll do it this way. It's a very perverse, we should, maybe there's some therapy should be involved at another time, but it's a very perverse thing. But yeah, you know, it was always part of it. It was always part of the package. And, you know, he had directed a lot. He'd made some shorts and he had done a lot of TV in the UK and had been sort of yearning to do a feature. And I think, you know, he has experience and expertise and just knowledge of workflow stuff that I don't have. And I thought, well, you know, who else do I know that I could really hang out with for such a long period of time and just watch and learn this stuff, or at least be exposed to it in this way, where it's also my project and our project, you know, and there's really nobody else like that. So that was very important. Going even further back in time, you know, when we were film students together, I was an undergrad and he was a grad student, and, you know, being in his thesis film, at that time, I remember it was because we were shooting it the summer after my freshman year of college, I think it was. And at that time, I wasn't sure I was going to stay in that program. I wasn't sure I liked it a lot. I was thinking about transferring to a different school. But then doing that project, you know, which was just the student thesis film that I think Oliver himself would tell you that he doesn't want anyone to watch anymore because, you know, it's from the juvenilia. Right. But that experience was really wonderful. And, you know, I feel really grateful to him for that because that sort of relit the flame for me to be interested in movies. And I stayed there and then, you know, went on and did other things. And, you know, it's been a long, windy road since then. But so that collaboration, like the movie itself, it's kind of unique and there's probably the only one of its kind. But we wouldn't be here without it. So it's great.
Do you think having gone through this process of making Around the Sun as a writer and a producer that you now feel that you have the confidence and the ambition to go and write and direct your next feature? Or do you feel like, oh, I like this way of working, like I want to collaborate again with someone else?
I do want to collaborate with lots of people. I mean, I, you know, the confidence, I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever quite have the confidence, but I feel like that's sort of okay. Like, you know, being in a place where you're unsure maybe is a little bit more fertile for me than being in a place where you think you know everything or something, you know, not that it's necessarily a binary like that. And yeah, Liz, you kind of asked about that too. I mean, you know, I'm one of the residents in the SF Films Film House program.
Yeah,
this
you
year.
Are. Nice.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And I have to say that it was my application to that program was assisted by carefully listening to episodes of your podcast. So thank you for
awesome.
That.
Wow.
Just hearing guests that you've talked, that you've had on the show talking about their experiences. But yeah, and that's great. And the plan for that was to, you know, to develop another project that I am going to write and direct myself. And, you know, I certainly want to do that and intend to. The confidence question is sort of weird now because of the situation we're in with the pandemic and also just the political situation we're in right now, which we don't need to talk too much about, but it does make me sort of stop and think, well, is my project really necessary? Like, do people really, is the world, you know, waiting for this thing? I don't know.
Right.
So I have some caution about that and circumspection about that. And I don't know, but I love the feeling of being in production with people. Like I was saying before, you know, I like writing by myself, but then, you know, I've had many years and other scripts that are just sort of sitting there on my hard drive and they don't exist as movies. And that's okay. It's good practice. You learn things, but nothing beats the experience of being, you know, with a group of people, ideally a small group, I think, where you're all really working on it together and you can sort of share the pride of making stuff. That is what I yearn for the most. Yeah.
I'm going to commit a cardinal sin. I have a statement, not a question. So I love what you said about how uncertainty is more of a fertile ground for you. I think very often as creatives, we're being told, you know, either just pretend to be confident, or that we should be acting a certain way. We should be acting like bosses or whatever. I recently got that feedback and I'm still like mulling it over in my mind. But I think what, if I can interpret both mine and Ulrich's nudging, and Ulrich, if you allow me to, I think it's also that like we receive like a lot of personal fulfillment being directors, from that role. And we want that for other people if that's what they're inclined to do. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's just that thought. And so my question, not statement for you to respond to, my statement, not question for you to respond to is, who cares if the world, if you think the world doesn't want to receive something that may be personal or non-political or doesn't have to do with the massive political upheaval that we're in right now, because it should has to do with your personal catharsis too. It
no, has, absolutely.
Like as a creator, you should make something, you know, to fulfill yourself. That's all. Sorry. But please, if you want to respond to that, feel free to.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, of course, I think everybody who is a creative person has to at some point make a decision to go forward with putting something into the world, you know, for people to see. And I mean, you know, as I was saying before about Around the Sun, it's so quirky and so personal. And I even said to him, you know, like, I don't know if there's an audience for this, but there's something about the difference between doing it and not doing it. And that the more I do sort of put some stock in the idea that if the more personal and true to yourself you make it, the more universal it could become, because somebody somewhere is going to respond to that aspect of it alone. And that has happened. I mean, we've shown it at festivals and people have responded to it in really nice ways. And yeah, I mean, I do expect as it gets more distribution that there will be people who don't get it or can't stand it or have all kinds of negative things to say.
Fuck those
but that
guys.
Happens. Yeah, I mean, and I also know that, you know, my model of being a filmmaker is really, has always been kind of modest in that way. Like, well, how could we do it in a way that's sort of intimate and maybe not classifiable as a genre, but has a certain something that people want to experience and maybe not, you know, a huge audience, but an audience that feels seen by the work and appreciates seeing it, and how to do that in a sustainable way, which is a big question for everybody. I'm still sort of grappling with that. I definitely want to make more, work. And yeah, there's, you know, in addition to the feature project that is sort of the core of my film house residency, there's other shorts and things that are also very personal. And, you know, I'm thinking about like trying to do some animation stuff that I could show to my kids, or that my kids could be involved with, you know, trying to figure out how to make film and cinema kind of part of your life is really the bigger goal. And there are a lot of ways to do that. And I feel like in some ways now it's, you know, it's better than it's ever been in that regard. There's still challenges, obviously. But yeah, there's, you know, the idea that it's like, well, you know, I'm in my 40s now. Like it's been such a long time since film school. I worked as a critic for a while. I didn't do film stuff for a while. And you sort of let go of this idea of like, oh, here's the path that you have to take. And that is kind of nice. Even if it means that you're toiling in obscurity for a long time. But if you're doing that with, you know, cool creative people who, you know, and you're part of a community of people who make stuff and who watch stuff, then that's amazing. So yeah, let's hoping for the best.
I just want to speak to the whole, like, you know, why me as a writer director sort of question that we've discussing. It's like, to me, it's all about the story, right? And like the idea. And if that idea or story feels like it needs to exist as a movie, or like it's something that's really important either to you, or just something that you haven't seen before that you really want to see made. And then the second half of it is like, am I the right person to direct this movie because I have an idea to how to make it a certain way that no one else is gonna think of, right?
Yeah.
And like I think about that a lot, because I'm a producer too. Like I've you know, I just produced my first feature as a producer, not a director, in February. And
congrats.
You know, I was just thinking about like how, oh, thank you. You know, like why I did that movie, and like why there was never a conflict with me as like, oh, I should really direct this movie. It's because you read it and you know the director and you're like, oh, this is this person's movie. Like they're the one to direct this movie for various reasons. Like, and if I were to try, like, I probably wouldn't do it justice the way that this person will. Right. Yeah, and so I just think it's all story related, and it's really like, you know, like we talked, like Timothy, my old co-host, we talked about this a lot. It's like, what movie deserves to be made, right? And like you have to have, like, to make a feature, it's like such a huge undertaking and such a difficult thing to achieve. It's like you really need to have the idea that you believe in more than anything, because that's the thing that will drive you to finish it. You know, and I know like this whole political time we're in, it's like, yes, like what movies should we be making, like what's important, but you know, I think like there's always room for entertainment. And like, as a kid growing up watching movies, no matter how bad things are going in my personal life as a kid, or, you know, whatever, bullies at school or whatever it was, like movies were always a thing I could fall back on. And if I can make one more movie that does that for a kid or for somebody else, and some, then it's like, that's an achievement. That's a, you know, that's worth it. Right.
Yeah.
Which speaks to what you said about Around the Sun. It's like you made this movie that was important to you, and you're finding that other people are finding it important too. And I think that's another key element of making films. Like, you don't want to service an audience, you want to service yourself first, and then like a lot of other people will relate to that if you like are true to
the
your
personal
spirit.
Is universal. Absolutely.
It's like put your own oxygen mask on first before putting it on the people next to you or the kids.
Absolutely.
In case if we can make the analogy that we're in some sort of airplane disaster, if that's what movie making is like, that's something like that. But
sometimes it feels that way.
Well, let's talk about some of the release plans for Around the Sun, because I know that we share a distributor, and I want to talk a little bit about that. And also about your relationship with critics and how you've been able to get coverage on the film. So have you been taking on that mantle of publicity? Tell us how you got it done.
Well, it's interesting. I worked as a critic for years, you know, mostly as a freelancer, but now and then on the staffs of different publications, all of which have died. It's a strange time in journalism. It's a strange time everywhere. And, you know, I'm part of the official name is now the San Francisco Bay Area Film Critics Circle. I'm part of that group of critics, and it's a pretty big group at this point. Some of those critics I know personally and are really lovely people. And so I thought, okay, well, I have the experience and some advantage of being on the receiving end of press releases about new movies. So I know a little bit about how that wheel turns. And we don't have a lot of money for Around the Sun. So I thought, well, okay, let me, you know, sort of take that on and see what I can do in terms of publicity. And it's, you know, it's definitely a hustle. Like you, I think, you know, people talk about this a lot and, but maybe don't quite understand it, but yeah, it really, it requires constant attention to try to get people to see the movie and to cover it and to try to figure out, when is the right time for them to do that. And it's a little bit awkward for me because, you know, the people that I know who, fellow critics that I know, you know, I still feel kind of cringy, like, okay, well, I've made a movie now and, you know, if you're going to dish it out, you should take it. So like, you want to check it out and maybe review it. And, you know, if they feel weird about it, I totally understand, but you still sort of have to ask, I think. And yeah, I mean, it's been a sort of slow, steady, process of getting critics involved as we went to different festivals and, timing some reviews with that. And then those reviews kind of build up as you go through the festival tour. And now, you know, yeah, our release is on August 4th.
And you're 100% fresh right now.
Happen to be 100% fresh. We have 5 reviews. And yeah, I mean,
that's
a couple
great.
Of them are from people I know. And, you know, you hear people say things like, oh, well, if you're 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, then if you get more reviews, then that, you know, that percentage might go down. And then like that little, whatever your rating is on Rotten Tomatoes might follow you around on different platforms when people see about the movie. So,
it does.
You know, you could be, yeah.
It
so it's like,
you
are you going to be self-conscious about that? And so there's this question of like, how many reviews do you actually want? And how much also the function of how the question of how much reviews matter in terms of people reading about it and seeing it. And that's sort of hard to get good data on, I think. You know, it's also the sort of a word of mouth thing. And, you know, how do you work with that? The ideas that we've had about that have changed even during the course of the post-production and festival run and release of the movie. So, you know, we're, it's like, I don't know, it's like trying to herd cats or something. And, you know, I'm very grateful for the nice things that some people have said about it and people who sort of perceive it for what it is and acknowledge it as such, which is, you know, not a glossy, high concept blockbuster, but a, you know, a quirky little art film. I feel some degree of responsibility to do everything I can to try to get the publicity that we need for it. And that, you know, that's a challenge, but it's also part of taking ownership of the movie. Or at least, you know, my share of the ownership of the movie. Yeah, it's been an education. I think that, you know, also critics, you know, I'm not really a critic anymore. I just wrote something recently for the first time in a long time. And it made me realize, like, it's been a while since I've been writing film commentary. And I miss it, but I'm also, it's really hard. Like, people are losing their jobs and freelancers are not getting paid enough. And there's all kinds of issues. And yeah, with 2 young kids, it's very hard to have time to concentrate, even though the thing that I last wrote was about movies for little kids. So I think, yeah, it's like the more narrow band of possibility. So I also recognize what it's like to be a critic and to have someone, you know, say, hey, I made a movie. Can you check it out? And can you, you know, and there's, it's pressure to some extent. So yeah, I'm grateful for what we've got so far.
But you think they'd be honest, right? Like if they didn't like the movie, that they would give you an honest, fair review.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that the coverage that we've had so far has been generally positive, but you know, there are people who I think are honest about how they respond. And that's kind of why I like them as critics and as people. And that's kind of what you hope for. In this case, like you're thinking about the audience and people who haven't heard of you, haven't heard of your movie, have presumably a million streaming options that they can choose from at any given moment, and might have the same issues that I have, which are like, yeah, we have 2 little kids and there's only a tiny narrow window of time during the day when we might actually be watching a film. One good thing about Around the Sun is that it's only 79 minutes long. So, you know, we're very considerate in that regard, but you know, you have to sort of bear in mind what the audience's needs or desires are and hope for the best.
And what are the general plans for the release of the film?
So now it's going to be on Apple TV and Prime Video on August 4th. And then I'm not sure how long that window is going to be, but then there's going to be sort of a further outreach to other VOD platforms, which Oliver has worked out with Giant Pictures, our distributor.
Giant? Yeah. Giant Pictures? I've never heard of them before.
They're giant. Yeah, I think, you know, part of the plan is to see kind of how it does with these first two. And yeah, I shouldn't actually, in addition to Prime Video and Apple TV, there'll be other sort of on-demand options.
Yeah, like through TVs and stuff, like cable
providers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I will be sort of curious to see how it goes and to see what kind of feedback we get, because it is useful. We're talking a bit about having some kind of virtual theatrical presence as well. I've been happy and lucky and delighted to be involved with the Roxy Theater in San Francisco recently, and we've been talking to them about, you know, arranging it as one of the films that they show in their virtual cinema space. And we've talked to other, or are beginning to talk to other theaters around the U.S. and maybe Canada to do that as well. Trying to figure out how to kind of time that with, you know, the VOD release. I like the idea that we could have a system where people could support little art house theaters in addition to seeing the movie, you know, as opposed to like just watching it on Prime. And that, you know, hopefully it, because not everybody has Prime Video. And also hopefully, yeah, that it might serve as a kind of marketing boost, word of mouth wise. But I don't know, it's hard to keep track of all this stuff, you know, like, especially with, yeah, with regard to the weird way that theatrical, virtual theatrical exists in this pandemic world. And, you know, again, also the thing about like sending out press releases and asking people to check it out. Yeah. I mean, you know, this, there's a lot going on in people's lives right now, and, to ask them to make some time and in some cases spend some money on this thing is, it's a not insignificant thing to be asking. I mean, to some extent, the movie is, I think, can serve pretty well as a diversion from everything that's happening in the world. So maybe it can be useful that way. But yeah, it's a strange time. And I think we're going to sort of try to stay as nimble as possible and see what happens when we release it through Apple and Amazon at first, and then hopefully be able to expand thereafter.
What's the marketing plan? Like, are you, is Giant Pictures, are they like, do they have like a marketing push they're going to do for the film? Or are you handling the marketing on your end? Like, what's the plan?
Yeah, good question. I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to talk about this, but there's really, it, from our experience with Giant, Liz's might be different. It's really, there's really not a lot of marketing.
They're not marketers.
Yeah,
they, it's, I not mean, they're basically an aggregator, yeah. But they do pitches, and they're actually successful pitches because they have a small slate.
Yeah, they establish these kind of relationships with the platforms. And so the platforms, you know, they get a kind of preferential involvement sometimes, from what I understand. So yeah, the marketing is really up to us, and we'll keep going. I mean, I think that some degree of social media outreach is logical if we can sort of figure out, I don't know, whatever kind of demographic tools you have, like from Facebook and Instagram, to think of, you know, people who might be interested in it, which is weirdly presumptuous. But then, you know, you're sort of casting it out and seeing if people are interested, and you can,
right.
If you really analyze some of that data, you can customize it, presumably.
What would the audience buckets be? Would it be like fans of My Night at Maud's and Last Year at Marion Bad?
I mean, you know, that's one of them. Of course, definitely, you know, people have mentioned the Before trilogy. You know, which on the one hand, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like, you know, classic genius Linkletter magic, and you know, that sets a pretty high standard. But of course, you know, it's an influence on the movie, and there's a vibe that is part of the DNA of what we've done, which is different, of course, because it's these two English people and they're in France, and it's, you know, the weird sort of cosmological stuff. But yeah, stuff like that. And you know, I think people who are interested in romantic movies and people who are interested in minimal scenarios, I think that I've seen it in the Apple listing. I've seen it described as both romance and fantasy. And that was, you know, those are categories that they assigned to it.
Speed of Life, you know, is there too. Fantasy.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Yeah. And I, you know, yeah, it's, for me, it's like, as long as people don't go into it thinking it's going to be, you know, whatever some example of some really high concept fantasy movie is, and then wind up thinking like, oh, this is, you know, much more, smaller scale than that. So yeah, getting people to kind of understand and try to manage expectations as much as you can. But on the other hand, you know, it's a movie that you sort of discover as you watch. So That's the risk that we take when we put it out
which,
there.
Which is what I love about it. And I love that, like, you can't really synopsize it too much without ruining it. Because I think that's, like, some of the best kind of filmmaking, where it's like you really just have to go see this movie in order to experience it, you know?
Yeah, that's nice. I hope people do. So, but yeah, the marketing, you know, it really will be me just kind of seeing where the action is and trying to customize it. And then, you know, trying to get more reviews and using social media as much as we can, and asking friends and people who are involved with the production to let their networks know about it. And maybe asking Liz for tips, as I've been doing for probably years now. And sort of, looking at other films that are sort of in similar spaces and kind of trying to emulate what seems to work for them. And I do feel like there's a lot of invention, like you're making it up as you go along. And it all is part of the package of making movies in this sort of indie way. Which I'm okay with, you know, that's, it's a privilege to do it. So, yeah.
So when this podcast comes out, your film will be released, or it'll be coming out like the day after or whatever. So if you're listening to this, go watch Around the Sun now. Just
please
do it.
Do.
Yeah. It's only 79 minutes of your life. It's not that big.
It's only
big
79 minutes of your life. Yeah. Or maybe more if it stays with you and you think about
and
it.
And I guarantee you're going to smile at least, like, you know, I don't know, probably 10 to 20 times watching the movie. So yeah, it'll be worth it.
Can I write that down and use it
That's
as a verb?
That's a really good pull quote. All right,
please.
That you just nice, pulled out of your butt.
I would be honored. It'd be my first pull quote ever for me.
Pull quote pulled from his butt. Yes, that's very nice. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, it's. I'm glad that it makes you smile, because that's part of what we're going for. Yeah,
and also just as like a genre fan, I think, like, without ruining anything, like, I think those elements of it were really surprising, and then the third act reveal was like,
all right,
sorry,
we're moving on. We're moving on to the final five questions.
Okay, let's do it.
So, Jonathan, we end the show with kind of some big picture look at your career, yourself. So what's the first film you ever made, and how do you feel about it now?
I think the first one I made was a movie that I made with my best friend Ed Dunn, called Feud. And it was a 16 millimeter black and white film made on one roll of film, edited in camera. Sort of a weird scatological movie about a guy grappling with his plumbing. And we shot that in Boston in our tiny little apartment. And I feel great about it. It was sort of done in a style of Eisenstein, and with Shostakovich soundtrack, and really weird and
delirious. This is like the most like highbrow show I've ever done at making movies. It's hard.
Yeah, well, this particular movie was not highbrow at all, except for that.
Your references
soundtrack.
Are. That's
yeah.
Great.
It's about a guy having some digestive issues. Very scatological. But it was the spirit of that thing was so great. We were just like, let's just do something, and it came out great. Haven't watched it for a while, but I loved it. Yeah.
What's the best filmmaking advice you've ever received?
I think the advice to trust your voice, which is something that was said to me by a teacher, Stephen Geller, who is also the screenwriter of the screen adaptation of Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, which is an incredible movie, and I recommend it to everybody.
Of course, Vonnegut comes up now.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Vonnegut's an influence, too. Steve Geller, who was a great teacher, and, it's been years since I've talked to him, but, he was... one of the things that I remember him saying a lot was trust your voice. And when you're a young person, that's important to hear. And when you're an older person, that's important to remember, because your voice is the one that's in your head all the time. And sometimes, it says things that are unpleasant, but the idea is that that's what makes you you. And that if you second guess it too much, then, you're not really helping yourself or anyone else. Yeah. Trust your voice.
Do you have a goal as a filmmaker?
My goal is to make more work and to be more involved with other creative people whose spirits I like, and to do that as regularly as possible. I mean, Around the Sun, as I said, was deliberately designed to be streamlined in every possible way. And it still took such a long time to get even to this point. To some extent, that's because it's the first one for me and for Oliver, the first feature, really. There's, of course, many reasons that anything can take forever. But yeah, I like that idea of streamlining it, because I want to be making stuff instead of worrying about making stuff, or instead of thinking about it, or instead of planning to do it, you know. It's obviously hard right now for a lot of reasons. And the goal is to be making stuff constantly and to be, yeah, part of the community, which includes your community. So thank you again for having me on.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're also part of the San Francisco film community. I mean, as a critic, yeah. And then also now as like a resident, you know, and as a filmmaker in general. So it's like, yeah. And now the Making Movies is Hard community, which I think is like, you know, even a wider community than that, which is awesome.
I love the little spots you've been doing where you get people to talk about their experiences and just these little clips, and they're amazing.
It's Liz.
Well, yeah. Well, congrats. And thank you for doing that. You know, it's very inspiring to hear people. And I'm always like, oh, I should Google that person and figure out who they are. Because, you know, you hear these, you get a sense of the industry changing, and you get a sense of a lot of really passionate, creative people out there doing it or figuring out how to do it and doing it together. And it's much more inspiring than the big picture outlook that I had, you know, 10 years ago even. And so that's very exciting. And yeah, thank you for doing that.
Our pleasure. If you could go back in time, what's the one piece of advice you would give yourself?
Oh yeah, good question. I would say, you think this is bad, wait till you meet 2020. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the glib answer. Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe that thing about, I said before, you know, the advice to trust your voice. I would say, no, seriously, you know, don't try to fit yourself into some box, because it's going to be an awkward fit, and you're going to know it's awkward, and then everyone else will kind of know that it is, or at least they're going to know that you feel awkward, and then that doesn't work. And yeah, just sort of hang in there. I think everything counts. Experience counts. And I don't know, you know, be good to the people you love. Basic stuff, you know, cheesy stuff, platitudes.
Nice.
But good to remember. That was, you said you asked for one. I gave you several.
That's okay. Yeah. There's no rules.
Yeah.
Our last question is, making movies hard?
No, it's getting them seen that's hard. No, I don't know. Of course it's hard. I think it's weird because there's so many of them now that you're like, well, obviously it can't be that hard, because look at them all and I'm trying to fight for attention. But yeah, I think it can always be hard. And the way to get through that is to surround yourself with the best people and to keep going forward.
Amazing. Awesome. John, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm honored, and it's nice to chat with you guys.
So where should people go if they're like, oh my gosh, this guy's amazing, I want to watch all his work? Where should people head?
In the unlikely event that that happens, they should go probably to aroundthesunfilm.com, and that's the website of the movie, and that will have links to where you can see it. And you can find me there, and you can find Oliver there, and drop us a line if you want.
So Liz, I wanted to hear, we're not doing the game. Sorry, we advertised the game, but we're not doing the game because we don't have a game question. But I do want to ask Liz about what you're doing in preparation for your feature. I think you're doing some stuff with interns. Tell us all about that.
Sure. So me and my producer decided we were going to work with an intern for school credit. So basically, I put the word out to a bunch of colleges, universities, nationally, and I'm interviewing interns this week. And like, my big thing is, how do I craft an internship that's not exploitational? Like, we like exploitational movies, but we don't like exploitational internships, right? So my thought is, at every interview I ask, what would be an ideal internship for you? What skill set do you need to learn to help you with your goals? And what's funny is, like, I think interns are not used to being asked that question, because they're like, I'll do anything. Whatever you want is what I want to learn. And like, that's not good. That's how they're answering the question. So we're just trying to make sure that an intern that we bring on isn't a gopher or a runner or just, you know, doing slave labor, but is actually really learning something without putting too much time or energy into the process.
So what have you come up with? Anything fun?
Well, I've only had 3 interviews, but I did find someone today who seems pretty perfect. Basically, she just is so open to creating weird art and wanting to support productions making weird art. And I was like, wow, boy, did you just say the right phrase. So she comes from a background where, like, community theater, where they just do a lot of kooky stuff. And they're just willing to, just an open mind towards creation and content. And I don't know what to say without sounding strange, but basically, like, our movie's gross. Our movie's supposed to be boundary pushing. And so it's exciting to know that there are young artists out there who want to be a part of making weird stuff.
So what do you guys think about Liz getting an intern? Do you have interns? Have you ever worked with an intern before? What's the experience been like? If you want to tell us about your intern experience, send us an email to podcast@mickeymoviesishard.com. Or if you like the show, you can leave us a review on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts. That's a great way to support us. You can also check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MMIH Podcast and YouTube at Mickey Movies is Hard Podcast. Thanks to our editor, Jeff Reimuth, for doing the editing. Thanks to Robert Jones for doing our social media. And thanks to our producer, Eric Toms, for being awesome. Thanks to you all for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.